All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio on WHBC 90.3 FM. According to the introduction that we had got, I am Ralph Cramden, and Alice bang-zoomed to the moon. She's not here today, which is really a drag. Heidi, my wife, my co-host, is not with me. She's feeling a little bit under the weather. I'm overworking her. It's definitely what's happening. And she's like, that's it. I'm going home to take a nice hot bath. Can't blame her with all the stuff that we've been doing. But I am here to hold down the fort and to continue along the path that we have been wafting for ourselves for about, over 4 months now, covering the musical career and the genius of Mr. Louis Armstrong. We've been doing this for a while. This is actually show number 17 dedicated to Louis, which is, I guess it doesn't surprise me. When I started, I didn't think there would be this many. But here we are with show number 17, and we're up to the year 1953. I think by the time the show is over, we'll be at the beginning of the rock and roll era. At least it will cover a couple of years in Louis's history. And as we pick it up in like the early to the mid-50s, I kind of made this point a couple of times, Louis was actually kind of fighting for relevance within the music industry. All the people who were the self-appointed in-the-know types were kind of, you know, debating whether or not Louis still had a place of relevance. His style of music, the ragtime or Dixieland jazz, as it was now being called, seemed like it was like an old-fashioned type of music, especially with the boppers being around. Didn't really matter much to Louis because he was still getting huge numbers of demands to play live, huge film offers, and as a pop artist, which he had recently decided to become by releasing a lot of pop tunes, he was becoming pretty popular in that regard, selling lots of records too to mainstream America. And the films that he was in actually had a lot to do with helping him in that regard, keeping him in everybody's sight. There was one film in particular that did him a lot of good. He was actually working with Jimmy Stewart in a movie called The Glenn Miller Story, about the obviously the life of Glenn Miller. And Louis was in that film. There's a little bit here that I want to read, just a short paragraph from a book called Lawrence Berggren's. He's the author. It's called Louis Armstrong, An Extravagant Life, about Louis's film appearances around this time. The film appearances added little to Louis's stature, but they were extremely lucrative. For 7 days' work on The Strip, which came out in 1951, the All-Stars received $20,000 for blasting out such staples as Basin Street Blues and When the Saints Go Marching In. For appearing in Glory Alley, Louis received $25,000. In 1953, Louis played himself in The Glenn Miller Story, starring James Stewart. He spent 2 days on the set, led the All-Stars in a bang-up rendition of Basin Street Blues, and collected $5,000 for his trouble. Even in that brief time, he made a memorable impression on Stewart, who solicited advice on how to prevent sore lips caused by blowing the trombone. I can't believe this. "Yeah, Daddy," Louis shot back, "when you go home tonight, have your old lady sit on your face." Next morning, Jimmy Stewart gave Louis the high sign. I guess it worked. From that soundtrack, The Glenn Miller Story, here's Louis Armstrong and the All-Stars performing Ochichornia.
Chichonia, my sweet Chichonia, honey, California, really want you. Look at here, Tony, where's Caledonia? My
That's an augmented version of Louis Armstrong with this All Stars. In case you were wondering who was playing all that awesome drumming, that actually was a very special guest on that track. That was Gene Krupa on drums with Louis for that song. Track that was taken from the Glenn Miller story, which starred Jimmy Stewart. Some very interesting patter between Jimmy and Louis. Anyway, around this time, also, Louis was in the studio plenty, still recording the stuff that he normally did. As I said, for the most part, he was recording pop songs around this time. Yeah, I think, you know, he was kind of giving up the whole jazz challenge as Bob had pretty much taken over. You know, it's what kids do. Kids take over, the old guys move aside. Louis is in his 50s. He was just he was a different type of relevant around this time. But here's a song that's a pretty good example of what Louis was about in the studio at this time. I think it captures a lot of his playful spirit. It's called The Dummy Song.
I'll take the legs from some old table. I'll take the arms from some old chair. I'll take the neck from some old bottle. hand from a horse, I'll take the hand. I'll take the hand and face from off the clock. And baby, when I'm through, I'll get more loving from the dum-dum dummy than I ever got from you. Some legs, get me a chair, and a bottle too. Give me a horse, and give me some time, and baby, when I'm through, I'll take the legs from some old table, I'll take the arm from some old chair, I'll take the neck from some old bottle, and from a horse, I'll take the hair. I'll take the hands and the face from off the clock. And baby, when I'm through, I'll get more loving from that dumb dummy than I ever got from you. I get more loving from that dumb dummy than I ever got from you. Yeah, Mama, I get more loving from a dummy than I get from you.
Yeah, obviously, the man still has it, still relevant, still making, you know, really, truly fun records to listen to. The jazz guys might not have seen the relevance of Lewis, but it was obvious that he still had a tremendous amount of relevance, even though he didn't necessarily fit into the bag that defined what bop was. In fact, it got a little bit contentious between Lewis and those guys. You know, he put out a Christmas record around this time. I think it was just at the around December of 1953. A song called "Is That You, Santa Claus?" came out. It just sounded just like Louis Armstrong doing the whole thing—the mugging and the faces and everything else—which was exactly what the boppers hated about him, because they just thought that he was like, you know, like being too. He was just giving it up to the man, so to speak, as opposed to being cool. You know, you could never imagine Miles Davis, for example, doing anything remotely like that. The fact it's hard to imagine Miles Davis even talking. Now, the difference is Louis Armstrong would not only, you know, he talk, he sang. He was a full-fledged artist in every sense of the word. So he just could never be like the boppers. It didn't make any sense. But like I said, there was a little bit of discomfort that went back and forth, and things were said. I think I covered a lot of that in earlier shows. But what is interesting is that Louis actually recorded a song about the boppers, and he started to perform it live. And it's not the easiest track to find, but I wanted to, I did a bit of a research on it, and I did manage to dig it up, so I want to play it here. What it is it's a track called the Whippin' Poof Song that Lewis changed the words to completely to turn it around to be about the boppers. And in Lewis's hands, the song is called the Boppin' Poof Song.
And this next number we're going to dedicate to Dizzy Gillespie and all the boys of the Boppin' Factory. It's the Whippin' Poof, Whippin' Poof. We named it the Boppin' Poof. I to put on my paraphernalia shirt. This red cap will tell all about it. Let's see it. Paraphernalia.
Thank you.
fables of that boy land, the place where Dizzy dwells, with those beards and funny hats they love so well. All the boppers were assembled, and when they're really high, they constitute a weird personnel. All the riffs the cats were making, they were crazy, cool and gone like this. Ooby dooby, ooby da, and the rest. Yes, let them beat their brains out till their flatted fifths are gone, and they'll pass and be forgotten with the rest. Yes, they are poor little lambs who have lost their way. Bah, bah, bebop. They are poor little sheep who have gone astray. Mama, yeah. Oh, Dixieland music, and they all condemn. But every wrong note those cats play, they think it's a gem. So Lord have mercy on all of them. Papi papa da 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 da. Yes, for that's my da 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 da. Papi papa da 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 da. Biba. Thank you, folks.
The word was on that Dizzy Gillespie kind of took it as a left-handed compliment from Lewis that he would acknowledge Dizzy as a player. Although it's obvious that Lewis's comments about the boppers, you know, not hitting the notes or, you know, too many flatted fifths and all that stuff in the lyric, you can tell that he's got a little bit of attitude about it. The thing is, in a lot of ways, they had a lot of stuff in common. Like, for example, this next track that I'm going to play, it's called The Gypsy, and it's not a really well-known song, but it's interesting that the two most, famous versions of this track were recorded by Louis Armstrong, the track I'm going to play now, and it was also recorded by Charlie Parker. So here we are, two of jazz's most famous improvisers, the old, you know, old school and the new school, both of them, you know, playing off of the same track. But at about the same time, because, you know, Charlie Parker was one of the guys who kind of took over as Lewis was aging. Well, anyway, let's play Lewis's version of this song called The Gypsy.
In a quaint caravan, there's a lady they call the Gypsy. She can look in the future and drive away all your fears. Yes, yes. Everything will come right if you only believe the gypsy. Yes. She can tell at a glance that your heart for love. She looked in my hand and told me my lover was always true. But deep in my heart, I know, dear, somebody else is kissing you. Yes, but I'll go there again, 'cause I want to be. Although I know she's lying, that my lover is true and will come back to me someday. ¶¶
That's a track called The Gypsy by Louis Armstrong and his All-Stars. An interesting thing that was happening with Louis around this time was the way that his manager was handling his career. As 1954 rolled around, albums was still a fairly rare thing. Most people were recording individual tracks. But what was happening was you'd have, normally you'd be signed to a recording contract for a number of years. And that was the way Louis's career was run for quite a while. Like he had just had a very long stretch on Decca Records. But around this time, his manager, Joe Glazer, realized that it might be profitable to play Louis off of the different record labels. In other words, have them more or less bid back and forth for Louis's attention. So rather than allowing Louis to be signed to any one label, what Joe Glazer would do is he'd sign deals for individual records or albums or maybe even just tracks to be recorded for each label. So you'd end up with a situation where Louis would record for RCA on some tracks, like maybe for instance the track we just heard or on Decca. And then he'd go to their arch rival, which would be Columbia Records, and he'd sign an album deal with them. So all the while, by playing them off of each other, Joe Glazer was making more money for his client, but the labels hated it. Well, the one good thing about this, though, that came out of it was Columbia Records had George Avakian at this time, who was one of the best producers of this era and maybe one of the best producers to ever record Louis. He understood. He had a great recording studio, first of all. Columbia Recording Studio is always well known for having great sound. But Avakian, for the time, had a great idea of how to utilize the studio. And for the first time, really, in Louis's entire career, there was a lot of attention paid to the acoustics of the sound and how things would work. And the result ended up being what could be arguably maybe the first genuine classic long-playing album, since it was being recorded in as early as 53 and 54. It's not even included in most people's list of classic albums because most people start that list around the year 1955. So this predates that even, having been released, as I said, in 1954. The name of the album was Louis Armstrong Plays W.C. Handy. The theme was very simple. It was just Armstrong playing a lot of his favorite W.C. Handy tracks that he had been playing for most of his life in one form or another. And it was just a matter of updating the arrangements and utilizing the All-Stars for the recording. That being said, what that actually means then is it's Trummy Young, Barney Bagard, Billy Kyle on piano, Arvel Shaw on bass, Barrett Deems on drums, and of course, Velma Middleton, the controversial second vocalist who was accompanying Louis around this time. I say controversial because a lot of people just, you know, thought that she diminished the impact of Louis's music and his band because she was really not necessarily the most talented singer that Louis could have grabbed. But Louis loved her nevertheless and considered her family. In fact, he treated his entire band like family and he protected them all the time, no matter what went on. There are stories of Louis showing up with his band, for example, to play at some of the music festivals like Newport, for example. And when he'd get up there, the Newport people would say to him that they have an all-star arrangement worked out where they're going to set him up with an all-star band. And Louis would refuse to go on until they basically would back off and let him perform with his band because Louis was protective of his players, including Velma Middleton. Well, you're going to get to hear some of her now. And actually, the opening track, very long for its time, a track that I believe exceeds 7 minutes for its day. It's an incredibly long song. You'll hear Velma Middleton on vocals and Louis Armstrong as they do the 1950s version of St. Louis Blues.
Thank you. sun go down. Yes, I hate to see that evening sun go down, 'cause it makes me feel like I'm on my last go round. If I'm feeling tomorrow like I feel today, yes, feeling tomorrow like I feel today, I'm gonna pack my trunk and make my getaway. Say a St. Louis woman wears a diamond ring. She pulls a man around by her apron string. If it wasn't for the powder and the stove bought half, say that like a schoolboy love is fine. Like Louis Armstrong blows so nice and high. Gonna love that man until the day I die.
I've been to the gypsy to get my fortune told. Yes, been to the gypsy to get my fortune told. Because the gypsy knows crazy about my jelly roll. Yeah, yeah. And when I went to the gypsy, she had fortunes all over the place. I'm telling you, yes, the gypsy had fortunes all over the place. But when she looked into my hand, she slapped me right in the face.
No, I ain't built so fine.
Oh,
yo, I ain't good looking, baby. Baby, I ain't built so fine.
I'm worried about what's on your mind.
But all the boys like me, 'cause I take my time.
That's the trouble now, that's the trouble. I'm gonna snatch me a picket off somebody's fence.
Wait a minute now, don't go berserk now. Wait a minute.
Yes, I'm gonna grab me a picket off of somebody's fence.
Hold everything,
bro. And I'm gonna whip you over your big head until you learn some sense.
Thank you.
All right, that is the St. Louis Blues, taken from Louis Armstrong Plays W.C. Handy, the classic album. There's a little bit of confusion around this record, and I should talk about it because I myself was confused. As the album came out in its original form on LP around the year 1954, when it was re-released on CD by Columbia, they actually re-released it with a lot of alternate tracks. And that's the version that I own, and that's actually where the track came from that we just heard. That was an alternate, longer version, actually, than the one that would have been on the original album, as that topped 9 minutes, the version that we just heard, incredibly. They have since then re-released the album on CD, which duplicates the original album version with the original tracks. So they're both great. It's just a matter of the fact that they're just different takes, different masters, and it can be a little bit confusing. If it looks like you see the original album cover, which is, I think, a picture of Armstrong and W.C. Handy together, that is the original release, while the original re-release with the alternate version shows Lewis dressed up in a big band attire. I should say in a marching band attire. All right, that being said, let me mention also right now while I can that you are listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM, coming to you from Nassau Community College. We're here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6 p.m. Wednesday, the show is simply American Hit Radio. And on Friday is How Music Changed, where we cover some of the most important and relevant aspects of music history from the past 100 years, maybe even more as time goes on. And we are looking at the music of Louis Armstrong. This is show number 17, dedicated exclusively to Louis Armstrong. And if you're interested in the history that we present, and if you want to catch some of these shows and hear them on demand anytime you wish, you can go to our website. They're all up on the site. Simply just click on them and play them anytime you want. Go to AmericanHitRadio.com or AmericanHitNetwork.com. Right there on the homepage, the Friday show is on the right-hand side. You click See All Shows, and there's the whole series. You can listen to 17 hours of Louis Armstrong with me talking in between. Probably too much. But they're all there, not to mention previous series that we've done as well. So check it out at AmericanHitRadio.com and AmericanHitNetwork.com. There's also our other site, our archive site called Shad Up and Listen, ShadUpAndListen.com, where you can go there and check out all of our shows in chronological order because that's our archive site. That's where we post everything. So speaking of Shad Up and Listen, I think that's what I'm going to do is we play one more track right now from the Armstrong Plays W.C. Handy album. Again, this is a version of a track that is on the original version with alternate tracks, but I think the only difference is that this version is unedited. Otherwise, it's virtually the same as what would have been released in 1954. Here from that album is Lewis's version of Beale Street Blues.
You'll see pretty browns in beautiful gowns. You'll see tailor-mades and hand-me-downs. You'll meet honest men and pickpocket skill. You'll find that business never closes till somebody gets killed. If Beale Street could talk, if Beale Street could talk, married men would have to take their beds in walk, except one or two who never drink booze, and the blind man on the corner who sings the Beale Street Blues. He said, I'd rather be here than any place I know. Yes, I'd rather be here than any place I know. It's gonna take the sergeant for to make me go. I'm going to the river, maybe by and by. Yes, I'm going to the river, and there's a reason reason why. Because the river's wet and feel she done gone dry.
Another track that is now considered definitive, actually. A lot of people believe that, including myself, that those two recordings are landmark recordings, maybe the definitive versions of those songs by W.C. Handy, talking about Beale Street Blues and, of course, St. Louis Blues. George Avakian, like I said, was the producer on this, was so happy with the results that he thought it would be a good idea to invite W.C. Handy into the studio so that he could hear the tracks for himself before they were released. Blind at the time, he actually came in, and as he listened, according to the quote from Avakian, is that he had tears streaming from his sightless eyes, so happy with the results. Lewis, who was also there at the time, tried to put Handy at ease, you know, saying, quote, "Ain't no work making records like this. Them old good ones, they play themselves, Mr. Handy. You get to blow in those beautiful changes, right? And you have to play good. He was just having a ball, that's all. Just trying to make him feel good about it. But good for W.C. Handy and especially good for Lewis. And since the record was received so well by critics, they decided to do something similar with their next release, sort of a copycat release, so to speak, a record called Louis Armstrong and His All-Stars, the record called Satch Plays Fats, meaning this time dedicated to the music of Fats Waller. Artistically, only moderately less successful. Also confusing in the sense that this was another one of those records that when first released on CD was full of alternate takes or unedited takes. That's the versions that I've got here, so that's fine. I think they're really close, and they're all from the exact same sessions anyway. So let's hear a track from that album, one of the most famous songs by Fats Waller. Here's Louis Armstrong performing Honeysuckle Rose.
For other sweets of any kind, baby, since the day you came around. But from the start, I instantly made up my mind no sweeter sweetness can be found.
You so sweet,
oh, Pops,
can't be beat.
You mean it?
Nothing sweeter ever stood on feet. Yes, yes.
Every honeybee filled with jealousy when they see you out with me. I don't blame them, goodness knows.
Yes.
Honeysuckle rose.
When you passing by, flowers drooping sigh. And I know the reason why. You much sweeter, goodness knows. Honeysuckle rose.
Yeah. Say, Pops, hey, don't buy sugar.
You just have to touch my cup.
You're my sugar.
It's sweet when you stir it up.
Said when I'm taking sips from your tasty lips.
Seems the honey fairly drip.
Your confection, goodness knows, honeysuckle rose.
That, of course, is Louis Armstrong performing Honeysuckle Rose from the album Satch Plays Fats, also from the 50s. Well, we're going to go back to the book by Lawrence Berggren, Louis Armstrong's An Extravagant Life, to let him narrate an introduction to the next track here, which I should point out is going to be track number 8, so that we know. Here's what comes out of Lawrence Berggren's book regarding, we are right now, say, around September 1955. Rock and roll has hit. It is part of the scene. And then although Louis Armstrong himself has actually had something to do with it in a lot of ways, I think we covered that last week's show, he's still very much his own person, trying to find something, actually trying to do something new creatively. So here's the book. In September 1955, Avakian cajoled Lewis into recording a tune that a number of other musicians had turned down, Kurt Vile's Mack the Knife from the Three Penny Opera. This was a dark, violent nightmare of a song, but it reminded Lewis of the thugs he'd known and admired as a child in New Orleans, and he agreed to record it. Glazer allowed one night for the project. Lewis entrusted the arrangements to his valet, Doc Pugh, who promptly lost them. Without preparation, Lewis needed 6 takes spread over several sessions to get through the song, since he didn't have his music. Avakian adroitly spliced them together, and the recording eventually sold over 1 million copies. It was on every jukebox in the land, until it was eclipsed eventually by Bobby Darin's version, which, keep in mind, came after. As you now know Bobby Darin's version, you can notice how much of Bobby's phrasing was lifted from Lewis's version. Anyway, Lewis's audiences began screaming for him to play the new hit night after night, but Doc Pugh, once again, managed to lose the arrangements. Finally, Lewis promised an audience in Miami that he would play Mack the Knife the following night. After the show, Avakian said, he goes to the cashier, gets 2 rolls of dimes, goes down to the coffee shop with the musicians and the sheet music, and starts pouring dimes into the jukebox, and he tells the guys, copy out your part. The following night, he's able to play his new smash hit. In the middle of the rock and roll era, it was Louis Armstrong with the fabulous performance of Mack the Knife. Now, that being said, I should point this out right now that actually it's track 9. I think I made a mistake. Yeah, we'll say that. I think what we should hear, how Lewis brought something to the track, by hearing just a taste of what it sounded like before Lewis recorded it. Let's hear a few seconds as it was recorded by the original artist, Lata Lenya. Fairly cool, huh? You get the idea there. That, of course, is Lata Lenya, whose name is actually in the lyrics of the song, as it appears, as it appeared by Lewis. But, of course, somewhere in the world there exists a tape of Lewis Armstrong trying to teach Lata Lenya how to sing the song with a jazz swing, and her having trouble getting it, being German, and, you know, and jazz being such a distinctly American thing, really, up until this point. Eventually, you know, he nodded that she's a fine singer, but she wasn't a jazz performer. But you can hear exactly what it was that Lewis brought to the equation, and why it was Louis Armstrong's version that was eventually pretty much copped almost wholesale by Bobby Darin to become a hit for him 2 years later. Here is the hit that became a big, not a comeback hit for Louis Armstrong, but a big hit single for him right at the beginning of the rock and roll era, his version of Mack the Knife.
The shark has pretty teeth, dear, and he shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife as Maggie, dear, and he keeps it out of sight. When the shark bites with his teeth, dear, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, wears like heat, dear. So there's not a trace of red. On the sidewalk, Sunday mornings, lies a body oozing life. Someone sneaking round the corner. Is that someone like the knife? Yes, from a tugboat by the river, baby. A cement bag drooping down, and the cement's for the weight, dear. Get you, Maggie, back in town. Yeah, Louis Miller disappeared, dear, after drawing out all his cash. And Mac Heat's been like a sailor. Did our boy do something rash? Suki Tadri, Jenny Diver, Lottie Lanier, sweet Lucy Brown. Yes, the line found on the right, dear. Now that Maggie's back in town. Yeah.
Lewis, still haven't hit singles in 19 during the rock and roll era. Pretty incredible. I'll leave you then with one more classic, I guess what you would consider Dixieland jazz from this era, from Louis Armstrong and his All Stars performing live. Another traditional traditional number from this time. And I hope you can join us next Friday as we continue looking at the life and music of Louis Armstrong. Meanwhile, we leave you with this track called Tin Roof Blues. Take care, everybody.
The Tin Roof Blues.